Pray with me, O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Dearest Master.
Dearest Master.
Blessed Mother.
Blessed Mother.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my
consciousness. Oh. You had a lovely Christmas holiday. Today I feel I just have a toehold in this body, so the rest is out with God, so we'll see what He does with the day today. On the 27th, we celebrated Papa's Sannyas Day, and here's a picture of Papa during his Sannyas Day, all lit up with wreaths, a smile. Also very thin as he went through extreme sadhana at the time. Thought I'd read to you an email that Swami Muktananda sent to me for Christmas in response to Christmas, and also Papa Sannyas Day and my response. On this blessed day, Swami Ramdas Sannyas Day, we honor the wholehearted commitment Papa made in totally throwing his lot in with God. This is what I wrote in the posting for that day. I have included an email of our dear Swami Muktanandaji sent on the 27th. It was a 26th on our calendar, as they are over 12 hours ahead of our clock. And my response, I've also included some salient quotes from Papa from his book, Swami Ramdas on Himself. And Swami Muktananda, blessed Atman, we are deeply grateful to both of you for the loving greetings on the occasion of Christmas, and we heartily reciprocate the sentiments expressed therein. On this joyous occasion of Christmas that wells up in our minds, in our mind, is the sublimity of the love of the Christ. His heart is ever shining with the luster of compassion, forgiveness, and peace. It is a heart that thrills in symphony with the ailing heart of mankind. The waves of love that go out of it seek to soothe, heal, and purify the heart of every being. How blessed does indeed life become when the mind ever dwells in Him. Yes, we all remember the blissful time we had with you during your stay in the ashram. When are you planning to come again? By the abundant grace of beloved Papa, Pujya Mataji, Pujya Swamiji, and all the Mahatmas, the activities of Anandashram is going on as well, well as usual. They also make us aware of their guidance, always in spite of our shortcomings, so that we are constantly reminded of the ideal they place before us. Today is beloved Papa's Sannyas Day. He reminds us that Anandashram came into existence because of the transformation that took place in the place of Vital Rao on the 27th December 1922. Our heart is full of gratitude to him who not only awakened us of the higher life, but also has been providing all that we need for realizing him in spite of the fact that we are not rising up to his expectation. Deepest love and best wishes to you and Karlaji. Ever yourself, Swami Muktananda. And my response, our dearest Swamiji, how thrilling to receive your most loving note. Your words about the life and teachings of Jesus could not be more perfect, as Jesus must be seen as the embodiment of compassion, forgiveness, and peace. It lifts and purifies our hearts just to think on these virtues made manifest in Him. Even as these virtues are at the core of all the great masters. You are now a day ahead of us, so While it is still early for us, we are glad to think of Papa Sanya's day even now. It is amazing to contemplate that on a human level, Papa was just one man who totally dedicated his life to realizing the universal vision of God and how that has changed the world. May Papa's vision of God spread all over this earth to usher in a new era, an era of peace on earth and goodwill toward all men. And may Papa's grace ever radiate from your hearts and souls in total realization and loving service. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And then Swami Ram Dass on himself comes from a book entitled that. The great change came over Ram Dass in 1922 with his life of renunciation, not as a result of his own effort or initiative, but by the power, will, and grace of God. Until this transformation came to him, he was living only an ordinary life. This does not mean that he was selfish or inflicted any injury upon others or exploited others for his personal happiness. It was only that he was not aware then that there was a great reality underlying this universal manifestation, and that by attaining that reality, one could become supremely happy and peaceful, free from all anger, hate, and bickering, which brought him into daily conflict with his fellow beings. When this great change came, Ram Dass was swept off of his feet, as it were. He did not know what was going to happen to him. He was asked to repeat the name of God constantly, to keep his mind serene and calm so that it could go deeper within himself, to find the truth on which his life was based. For that purpose, he was made to give up everything, all attachments. To tell you the truth, when God wanted Ram Dass to leave his family, the old family you may call it, and go on a wandering life, he did not know why he was going. He went because God led him away from that place. He had no idea what was in store for him. If it was for sadhana, why should he go elsewhere? He could have practiced it sitting at home. Still, God wanted him to go. Ram Dass did not ask him why he was being taken away, but he himself whispered to Ram Dass' ear, "Ram Dass, I am taking you from place to place not because you have to renounce everything, but because you have to see that everything is my form. You have to go to householders and tell them that they need not renounce worldly life in order to realize me." It was with this object that he made him give up his old life. Having experienced that supreme joy in this state, Ram Dass was going about telling everybody that if they lived on the lower level of life like animals, they could never get real happiness. They must transcend all these and go down deep within themselves and realize the all-pervading eternal spirit, which is pure bliss and peace. And I concluded, "Our dearest Papa, we pray that the same desire for God be awakened within us that inspired you, that we are led even as you were led, and that we find fulfillment in the same universal vision of pure bliss and peace in which you are constantly immersed. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram." And reading from In Quest of God, Chapter 2, Renunciation. Now from the narrow pond of a worldly life, Ram had lifted up his slave to throw him into the extensive ocean of a universal life. But to swim in the wide ocean, Ram knew Ram Dass wanted strength and courage, for gaining which Ram intended to make his ignorant and untrained slave to pass through a course of severe discipline, and under his strict guidance and support. So one night, while engaged in drinking in the sweetness of his name, Ram Dass was made to think on the following strain. "O Ram, when thy slave finds thee at once so powerful and so loving, and that he who trusts thee can be sure of peace and happiness, why should he not throw himself entirely on thy mercy? which can only be possible by giving up everything he called mine. Thou art all in all to thy slave. Thou art the sole protector of the world. Men are deluded when they declare, I do this, I do that, this is mine, that is mine. All is Ram, O is thine. All things are done by thee alone. Thy slave's one prayer to thee is to take him under thy complete guidance and remove his I-ness. This prayer was heard. Ram Dass' heart heaved a deep sigh, a hazy desire to renounce all and wander over the earth in the garb of a mendicant in quest of Ram wafted over his mind. Now Ram prompted him to open at random the book Light of Asia, which was before him at the time. His eyes rested upon the pages wherein is described the great renunciation of Buddha, who says, For now the hour has come when I should quit this golden prison where my heart lives caged, to find the truth which henceforth I will seek for all man's sake until the truth be found. Then Ram Dass similarly opened the New Testament and lighted upon the following definite words of Jesus. And everyone that has forsaken houses or brethren or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my name's sake and receive 100-fold and shall inherit everlasting life. And again, he was actuated in the same way to refer to the Bhagavad Gita, and he read the following shloka. Abandoning all duties, come to me alone to shelter. Sorrow not, I will liberate thee from all sins. Ram had thus spoken out through the words of these three great avatars, Buddha, Christ, and Krishna, and all of them pointed to the same path, renunciation. At once Ram Dass made up his mind to give up for the sake of Ram all that he had hugged to his bosom as his own and leave the samsaric world. During this period he was very simple in his dress, which consisted of a piece of cloth covering the upper part of his body and another wound around the lower part. Next day he got two cloths of this kind dyed in gura, or red ochre, and the same night wrote two letters, one to his wife, whom Ram had made him look upon for some time past as his sister, and another to a kind friend whom Ram had brought him in touch with Ram Dass for his deliverance from debts. The resolution was made. At 5 o'clock in the morning, he bade farewell to a world for which he had lost all attraction, in which he could not find nothing to call his own. The body, the mind, and the soul were all laid at the feet of Ram, the eternal being, full of love and full of mercy. The morning train carried Ram Dass away from Bangalore and dropped him in the evening at Erode, a railroad junction. He had taken away with him the sum of ₹25 and a few books, including the Gita and the New Testament. At Erode, he found himself strangely helpless, without any plans or any thought of the future. He did not know where he was being led by Ram. He wandered about for some time, and when darkness fell, he approached a small low hut on the road side and finding at his entrance a middle-aged mother, requested her to give him some food. The kind mother at once welcomed him into her hut and served him with some rice and curd. The mother was very kind. With great difficulty could she be induced to accept some money for the food supplied by her. On leaving the hut, he proceeded to the railway station. He laid himself down in a corner in the station and took rest for some time. He did not know what to do or where to go. At midnight, a bell rang to announce the arrival of a train. He got up and found near him a Tamilian, who inquired of him regarding his movements. Ramdas was unable to say anything in reply. Ram alone could determine his future. Here his friend promised Ramdas to take him with them as far as Trichinopoly, for which place he was bound. Money was given him for the purchase of a ticket for Ramdas, and both boarded the train. It was evening when the train reached Trichinopoly station. Alighting from the train, he proceeded to the city. All the time, all the way from Mangalore, the divine mantra of Sri Ram was on his lips. He could not forget it. The utterance of Ram's name alone sustained and cheered him. Taking rest for the night on the veranda of a house by the roadside, next morning he started on foot to Shunagam, about 7 miles from Trichy. He reached the place about 8 o'clock. Here Ramdas was first led to the secret of Ram's purpose in drawing him out from the sphere of his former life and surroundings. And that purpose was to take him on a pilgrimage to sacred shrines and holy rivers. At Srinagam, the beautiful river Kaveri was flowing in all of her purity and majesty. Going up to the river, he bathed in its clear waters. Here on the banks of the Kaveri, he assumed, by Ram's command, the robe of the Sannyasin. It was a momentous step, by taking which Ram gave him an entirely new birth. The white clothes previously worn by him were offered up to the Kaveri, who carried them away in her rushing waters. The gura, or orange-colored cloths, were put on, and the following prayer went to the feet of Almighty Ram. O Ram, O Love Infinite, Protector of all the worlds, it is thy wish alone that thy humble slave should be induced to adopt sannyas. In thy name alone, O Ram, he has given up samsara and cut asunder all bonds, all ties. O Ram, bless thy poor devotee with thy grace. May Ramdas be endued with strength, courage, and faith to carry out thy name. Ram, the following vows and bear all trials and all kinds of privations that may beset the path of the sannyasi in his passage through the rough and perilous life of a mendicant. This life be henceforth entirely consecrated to the meditation and service of Sri Ram. Strict celibacy be observed, looking upon all women as mothers. The body be maintained and fed upon the food procured by bhiksha or on what was offered as alms. The thrills of the new birth, new life, and the sweet love of Ram was felt. A peace came upon Ramdas' struggling soul. The turmoil ceased. Ram's own hand seemed to have touched the head of his slave. Ram, blessed. O tears, flow on, for the mere joy of a deliverance. Sorrow, pain, anxiety, and care all vanish, never to return. All glory to thee, Ram. The great blessing came from Ram. I take thee under my guidance and protection. Remain ever my devotee. Thy name shall be Ram Das. Yes, Ram Das. What a grand privilege it was to become the Das of Ram, who is all love, kindness, all mercy, and all forgiveness. And so begins the wandering life of Papa that he continued for the next 4 years. In Papa's case, he did not carry any money. He only had a spare cloth. Eventually, he got rid of the rest of the 25 rupees, and he didn't carry any money and refused to take any money at all. He would take only food or whatever was needed at a particular time. And so he wandered all over India, almost in a daze, you might say. Now, this comes at a particular time in a sadhana's path in which you get a distaste for this world. You no longer care for the things that this world has to offer. It's not something you can necessarily manufacture. Sometimes people try to take on a sannyas robe and adopt that style of life, and they're not really prepared for it. They're not of that total mind yet. Different devotees would come up to Papa when he established the ashram, and they would ask him whether they should adopt a sannyas life. And Papa would say, if you're asking, you're not ready. It has to be such a deep compulsion within you that you cannot help yourself but do it. Now, an exception to that was Swami Satchidananda, who actually was not inspired to take on the orange cloth. Perhaps, thinking of his personality, he did not think himself worthy. He was living the life of a sannyas, but he was not yet taking on the orange cloth, and it was a Papa's insistence that he do so, that he did. And later on, he said that he was grateful for it because he thought that it saved him difficulties along the line by having the orange cloth. But the orange cloth doesn't guarantee anything. I remember one time getting off the ferry up in Canada and driving by a field where there is all these pumpkins that had come into ripeness. And as I looked out and I saw all these beautifully orange orbs out there in the field, that I had the thought they look like tiny little flames. And then I thought, well, that's what the sannyas orange is. It is when this kundalini flame has awakened inside of you and it is burning up all the dross, it is burning up everything of the world, all of your attachments, everything that you've held dear about this world in the past. Now, you might ask, why is it that you have to renounce this world? And the answer is because we become so inebriated with the things of this world. We have identified with them, and because of that identification, we have lost our sense of knowing who and what we truly are. We do not remember that we are God incarnate, that we are divine beings at our core and our essence, and that it is for this purpose that we renounce the world, because this is through this fact that when we lose all desire for this world and we recognize the superior joys of the spirit, that we are cured of that ignorance of our oneness with God. It is not a small task to be able to do this. It runs pretty deep through us. I remember when God began to take different things away from me. He took away family, he took away home, and eventually took away profession, and all these different things were taken away one by one. And I was surprised at times, because I didn't see myself as particularly attached to any of these things, but it's interesting when you analyze the mind, and the mind gets its definition of who and what it is, its place in this world, through the things of this world, through a home that you live in, through possessions that you have, through a position that you hold, through a profession that you pursue. All of these things are reference points for the mind. And as you see these different reference points, you know who you are in this world. But who you are in this world is a very definite limitation. It's not who you are in God. And you may have a sense of who you are in God, but you're not completely there yet. Because you still have these attachments, you still have these old references as to who you are in this world. They limit you, they define you, they keep you boxed in. And so when we begin to feel this renunciation of the world, it comes upon us perhaps without even our bidding, without any effort on our part. I remember in my late teen years that I looked on this world and I looked on the people that I knew around me, and I didn't feel any attraction for this world. Now, it didn't mean that I was completely dispassionate towards this world. I still had my attachments. But in terms of looking forward to the world, in terms of thinking how I would make my mark upon this world, I had no interest in any of that. What I had an interest in was curing this pain that I felt within, and I didn't even have a name for it. Later on, I would come to see that I was in a spiritual crisis and that I was being called towards God consciousness, but I didn't know it at the time. I just knew that there is an unhappiness about this world. Now, because Mother followed a householder yogi path, on meeting her, there was, at least to some degree, I was steered back into the world. But the difference is now that I was armed with Kriya Yoga, with chanting of Ram Nam, with Hung Sa, and through these various things, I could, if I was sincere in my practice, I could enter into this world, but not be of this world. I could lead a life of renunciation, even while I was held on to a position in this world. There's a famous story of King Janaka, and he was a great spiritual master as well as a worldly king. And one day there was a young boy who was sent by his guru to go to see King Janaka, and he says, I'm not your Satguru, your ultimate guru. That is King Janaka. You must seek out from him the complete realization that you are yearning for. And so the boy went, and he had never been to the palace before, and he sought entry, and he was given entrance into this great palace, and was filled with riches and ministers and people going to and fro. And he thought, what am I doing here? I'm on a spiritual quest, and this is everything worldly. Well, he had a few books with him, and finally he came into the room where King Janaka was holding court, and he saw him performing all of these businesses and things of the world. And he thought, this isn't the place for me. My guru has made a mistake. I need to leave this place. And so he was turning around and leaving, and King Janaka was reading his mind. And so he called for the boy, and he brought him to him, and the boy sat down, and the king asked, what is it that you want? The boy said, I want God realization. The king asked, why were you leaving? He said, I see nothing here but the world, and I don't want anything to do with the world. I'm tired of it, and I want to realize God alone. Well, as they were talking, suddenly a fire broke out in the palace, and the fire began to take over the entire palace. Meanwhile, people were running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And the king couldn't be bothered to do anything about the fire at all. He is so enthralled with his conversation with his young sadhaka. And so the young boy had a few holy books with him, and he had set them aside. And as the flames got closer and closer, he started hugging his books towards him just a little bit more and a little bit more. Meanwhile, the king was completely undisturbed by the smoke, the flames, the heat, everything. And he continued to talk about God. He continued to talk about the path of realization. And so finally, the flames had come so near that they were threatening the boy's books. And so the boy took up his books, and he was holding them in his lap. And the king asked him, what is this? He says, here my entire palace is burning down, and you have a few books, and yet you are hugging your books to your bosom. Are those not worldly attachments? What do those have to do with God? And the boy saw his error. He saw where this great king could live in this world, but not of this world. And as a result of that, he began to see that the king was really a great, great soul, and there is much for him to learn from him. So you see, you cannot tell. In Master's case, he had the great disciple, Rajasi. Rajasi was born James J. Lin, and he was a self-made millionaire. He went to work as a boy. He grew up very poor, and he went to work for the railroad, and then he managed to get his brother a job with the railroad. Well, the railroad was cutting back in that area, and they were going to cut his brother's job. His brother was married and had some children, and James Lin was unattached at the time. So he talked to the station master, and he says, why don't you keep my brother on and cut me? I don't have a family to support. So the station master agreed, and James Lin traveled then into the big city. While he was there, he went to work for an insurance company. And he is a very driven young man. And he got a law degree and a CPA simultaneously while he was working full-time for this insurance company. I think he was not yet 25 years old. And the owner of the company was wanting to retire, and he hadn't found anybody to buy his company yet. So James Lin said, why don't you sell it to me? He said, people would think I'm crazy. You're just a young man. I see that you're exceptional. But I don't know that I can do it. And James Lynn talked to him and convinced him that it was a good bet for him. And so James Lynn took over the company. And he changed the incentives for the salesman. And the company began to grow. And he paid off the loans that he had taken out for the company early. And he completely paid off the owner. And he took it and he continued to make it grow. And he became a multimillionaire. Well, through all of this constant business activity and this involvement in the world, he couldn't sit down for a minute. Not a minute. If he sat down at all, next thing you knew, he popped back up. He was thinking, he was talking, he was always planning, and he was constantly in this rajasic state. Well, this was perturbing to him after a while. He had so much money, but he had no peace. He had nothing that was real satisfaction. He had gotten married and had the satisfaction of that, and yet being married to a beautiful woman and having a millions of dollars was not happiness to him. He realized that. What was unbeknownst to him at the time is that he had been a yogi in many, many previous incarnations meditating up in the Himalayas. And so he sought out different yogis, different spiritual masters, and he didn't find quite the right one. And finally, Master came, I believe it was to Chicago, to a World's Fair there. And they met there. They heard about each other. And Rajasi came to see Master. And he sat down to meditate with him. And the first time he sat to meditate with him, he meditated for 6 hours straight. And he got established in a sense of peace that never left him after that. Now, he is an extraordinary soul. And he was very loving and very dedicated to Mother or Master all of those years. And down through the years, particularly through the years of the Depression, he really helped keep Master afloat financially. And eventually, towards the end of his lifetime, towards the end of Master's lifetime, he was able to get him established with a large amount of money so that it assured the continuance of the organization of Self-Realization Fellowship. He was of such a highly advanced degree of spiritual realization at that time that Master oftentimes referred to him as Saint Lynn. And also he gave him the name Rajasi Janakananda. And it was a great title for him, a wonderful title, to be a royal master of discrimination. Dhyana is that discrimination, and he had it. He could live in this world, but not of it. And Rajasi loved the physical hatha yoga, but towards when he got older and more established in divine consciousness, Master suggested that he not be too much in the body, that he learn to immerse himself into divine consciousness. I received a letter recently from a Kriyaban, from somebody who's gotten the Kriya from other lineages, which is fine. But he's going out and he's asking this one and that for the Kriya that Master taught, which is the one that we teach and that Mother taught us and that we continue on. But he's gone through so many different initiations, and he's gone through so many different things, and he's still searching. And he told me that through his email that he'd gone in through the Kutastha Chaitanya, through the Ajna, and had gone into the spiritual eye. Well, that's fine. But just to go into it once is not the point of it. That's a wonderful thing to have happen. That is certain. But you must learn to become immersed in divine consciousness. Just diving in once or twice is not going to purify your consciousness to the point where you can become one with Him. Indeed, you can go into divine consciousness. You can have an experience in God. And then when you come back out, then you are just as immersed in the ego as before. Now, this may go against what some people think, that just simply one touch, one experience in God is all that it takes, but it's not the case. It's really just the beginning of your spiritual path. Papa talked about people coming to an Anandashram, and when they came in, he said that the ego would jump off and hang itself on a peg at the gate when people would come in. And they would be on best behavior and act like little angels the whole time. And then by the time that they were leaving the ashram, the ego was waiting for the individual, jump off the peg and jump right back onto the person again as soon as they left the ashram. Because their mind would become immersed back into the things of the world again. Just feeling a little bit of God is very encouraging, and it's wonderful, and it gives you a taste of things to come. But this path of purification and renunciation is something that requires much more from us. We have to give up the idea of the things of this world. We have to be willing to love God with all of our heart, all of our mind, all of our strength, and all of our souls. For most of us, this is a struggle. This is not something that just comes overnight. And we have to be willing to work at it. We have to be constantly on vigilance that ego doesn't jump off of its peg and get hold of things again. One of the things that Jesus really took umbrage with is those who were parading in spiritual organizations, but they had lost their way. Perhaps they started out sincerely. Perhaps they started out wanting to do good things and achieving realization. But life has a way of wearing you down after a while. And if you're not really dedicated towards your spiritual path, if you're not really focused upon God alone, you can get caught right back up with the things of the world, only you do it in through a spiritual organization. And as God humorously told me one time, where two or more are gathered, there shall be politics. And it's true. And it's suddenly you're in a spiritual organization. Well, this one isn't acting properly, and that one isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing. Never mind what you're doing and where your mind is at. Obviously, it's not on God. But you're thinking about what everybody else is doing, and well, how do you make advancement? How do you get further? How do you get more of a name for yourself? And suddenly the ego is something like the wolf that has put on some sheep's clothing. And it's acting one way, all pious and all humble, but it's completely filled with ego. One time somebody said, well, the president of SRF must be realized they've been meditating for so long, as if it's a union job where you're granted some kind of, benefits after putting in so many years. It's not like this. And you can't expect things to happen in that kind of a way. Sometimes people have been on the path for a long time and somebody new comes on the path and they take off like a shooting rocket. And they zoom past everybody else who have been putting in lukewarm efforts for so long. And they think, well, who is this young little upstart? Why do they think they're anything? And this is something that we have to be on guard about. Are we putting on an air? Are we really putting ourselves into our spiritual practice? Or are we just treading water? I talk about this many times because this is such a danger. The mind can get accustomed to being in just a certain place. And it's not uncomfortable. It's not painful. But it's also not thrilling. It's also not blissful. It's not also the complete joy and everything that God is. When you think God is infinite, do not put any circumambulation around that. You can't do it. God is infinite. Can you even begin to grasp what that means? And if God is infinite, that means God realization is infinite. That means you continue to go on and on and on, exploring the vast body of what God is. As long as you have any sense of individuality at all, you will always be learning. You will always be growing. You will always be exploring new elements and new aspects of God. This is a wonderful thing. Now, if the human ego hears this at a certain point, it thinks, well, what's the point? I'll never know all of God. But when you get a taste of God, you think, oh my goodness, this forever, I couldn't imagine anything better, anything more wonderful. You are the constant servant. You are the constant student. You are the constant one who's growing in God. And it's wonderful and it's beautiful. And it lifts you out of your being. It lifts you out of your old patterns. It takes you to new worlds. You explore new aspects of God. And sometimes you have no words for it. Sometimes the very simplest words take on the most profound and deepest meanings. To love your neighbor as yourself, can you ever completely fathom what that means? It means that you see more and more and more of God in every element, in every aspect, in every person that you meet. That you no longer take for granted, oh, I know this person. I can know this whole person. I know all about that. That you can even know about any particular subject to its end. You are a constant explorer. You are constantly on the verge of something new, something magnificent, something beautiful. And you are always serving. God is always looking to express through you His infinite light, His spirit, His joy, His everythingness. How can that not be the most exciting, most magnificent, most beautiful life that you have ever heard of? But in order to get there, we have to have this feeling that we're letting go of everything in this world, that nothing takes precedence over God. If you think, well, I do all right with the world, but I'm a little worried about what this person thinks or that person thinks, or will they think that I look foolish? God has put me into many foolish circumstances. I remember one time I was downtown at a bookstore, and suddenly God took me up with His magnetic force, as He was apt to do at the time. He would move me so many cubits this way and so many cubits that way. And it was all to break me loose of old patterns and establish my complete reliance, total trust and love upon God alone. And so right in the middle of God and everyone, in the middle of this door, He just started moving me around in circles this way and that way. He would move me a few steps this way, a few steps that way. Now nobody came up to me and asked me what in the world I was doing. Maybe they were afraid to. But I allow God to move me in this way. And when He was done, it took maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And finally, when He was done, He released me. One time I was in another store. I was there with someone else, and I was sitting and just minding my own business. And suddenly this magnetic force took me over again and made me move in this direction and that direction and then up some escalators and then up another pair of escalators. And I went to a certain floor and made me turn around and then stand in a particular place. And as I stood there, the person that I was there with came out of a door there. I had no idea where this other person was in this door. And so God was showing me, put your trust completely in me. Put your faith completely in me. Give me to you. Give yourself to me completely. And I will take your life. I will guide it. I will mold it. I will show you exactly what to do and how to be in this world. Your life is no longer your own. Now, when we're sitting in our comfortable armchair, sometimes it's easy, we think, to go ahead and have that kind of surrender. But when God puts us to the test, you know, He knows where your soft spots are. He knows where those places are that you would prefer to not have exposed. Mother talked about giving a talk one time, and it went on and on and on, and she talked about every one of her faults and everything that she had done wrong. She confessed all of her sins. It was not anything of her own making. But God did it through her, but she allowed God to do it through her. You see, Mother always had her free will, as we all do. And we can choose to go against God's will. We can choose to stop things right where they're at. We can always have that choice, even when you're in the midst of spiritual experiences. If you desire strongly enough, you can make them stop. And you can take yourself out of those experiences. But you will no longer progress towards God. And in this game, there's no neutrality. You're either going forward or you're going backwards. Because you're constantly creating. Constantly creating. And are you creating a path toward the light or towards darkness? And you have to choose. You have to choose. Sometimes you have to leave people behind. And you think, well, I don't want to leave people behind. I want to take them with me. I want us all to go together. I remember when Mother and I were talking about when she would leave the body. And I said, Mother, when you leave the body, I want you to take us all with you. I just recently concluded the reading the Ramayana again. And at the end, at the conclusion, Rama took his brothers with him. And many of the beings who had come to take incarnation, they all left at the same time. And I thought that's exactly what I was asking Mother for at the time, but I wasn't unaware of this story. And she said, if I do that, who will carry on this work? So I had to reluctantly surrender to her will in this. Because it was her will that this continue on. And it will continue on until God decides otherwise. You know, when you surrender to God, you can hold no idea about the future other than what God gives you to have. You can hold no idea about yourself. Will I look smart or will I look foolish? God's taken my brain away many a times and made me look completely foolish from a human standpoint. And I had nothing, and I realized I had nothing. I had no thought. I had no brain. I had nothing. Completely empty. But I had Him. And therefore, I had everything. So you see, renunciation is something that happens on the inside. It can't be guaranteed by having a position in a spiritual institution or so many years marked on the calendar of following a certain spiritual practice. It can't be had because the world thinks you're a grand person. All of this is meaningless in the eyes of God. The one true measurement is your breadth and depth of God experience, unfolding moment to moment. Are you immersed in God? Are you surrendered to Him? Is your mind focused upon Him alone? Is your heart filled with His love and compassion? Are you in loving service to Him from day to day? These are the measurement sticks that you can use to analyze yourself and to see how you're doing. God is not far from you. He is the breath of your own breath. The thought of your own thought. The life that streams through this body and allows it to move and to breathe and to have its being. Will you not take the time to further investigate all that that means? To surrender yourself to that seed inside of you that has taken birth. And that is striving to grow into a great tree in which the birds of heaven may nest and which others may take shelter and shade. Will you not become that great being in God that you have been from the foundation of this creation? And stop parading as a tiny little human being living upon this mud ball, the earth, and knowing no more than that about yourself. When you compare it to the greatness of everything that God is, it is a very great tragedy that we do not know in truth who and what we are. Papa took that plunge, and look at how he has changed this world. Thousands and hundreds of thousands have had their lives changed because of the power of God in this one great God-man. And we have definitely all been the direct beneficiaries through Mother and through the things that she began. We honor you, Papa. And we ask, we pray from the depths of our hearts that we be inspired with the same aspiration that God gave to you, that we may remain true, as you remain true, to finding God realization in its highest elements, and that we serve our fellow man as we would serve God. And we do it with all purity, love, and devotion. Om Papa, Om Swami Ramdas. Once when Mother was sitting with Papa, she asked Papa, "Papa, will you be my Papa too?" And Ramdas said, "Yes." Ramdas is Papa to everyone. So we may all claim our privileged position of having Papa as our Papa as well. And to find that smiling face within our own hearts and our own souls, smiling out to us from eternity, ever awaking this to our divine heritage. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram. Shall we sing a little Papa's Ram Nam? Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. 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 Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. Please pray with me, O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. my mind and my intelligence,
are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Amen. Pranams. I bow to the light within you.